off my lawn.
Listen, old man, you don't want to fuck with me.
Did you hear me? I said get off my lawn now.
Are you fucking crazy? Go back in the house.
Yeah, I blow a hole in your face and then I go in the house and I sleep like a baby. You can count on that. We used to stack fucks like you 5 feet high in Korea, use you for sandbags.
Okay. Well, you better watch your back.
It's creepy. Come on.
Thank you.
Get off my lawn.
Tom Lester, Tampa Tommy, come on down. You're the host of the Insurgent Radio Network, broadcasting live from the bunker in North Central Indiana. Right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern, where the elite drink to eat, the first thing you drink. Also nearby is Terrible Tommy's Weapons of Mass Destruction Used Equipment Yard, where you can purchase a freshly refurbished weapon of mass destruction for pennies on the dollar, if the price is right. You can reach Tom at PR Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Address your letters and mail to Tom Metzger, Insurgent, just plain old box holder. Good old Tommy O'Kiss.
Well, how are you, how are you, how are you, as Arthur Godfrey used to say, and you young guys never heard of him. This is Terrible Tommy in the bunker right here in North Central Indiana on Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day. Yeah, it's the 14th of January, 2015. It looks like by the Frank Silva Memorial Clock, we've got a half moon up there. And it's about 7 degrees here above zero. And it's about 68 degrees right here in my well-insulated bunker. How about that? Well, I see the French boys are rolling out the red carpet for the Jews. They don't want them to leave. The Jews are leaving by the thousands out of France. And Jimmy Carter, I get a kick out of Jimmy Carter. Every once in a while, he says something that just drives him crazy. He said, well, I don't see why the French want to leave, the Jews want to leave France. They're much safer in France than they are in Israel. They're going crazy over that one. Well, the head of France, Hollandia, or whatever his name, he's put out 10,000 troops to not only worry about these guys that knocked off the Mad Comic Book, not the Mad Comic Book, but like the Mad Comic Book comic. But also, he's using this excuse to crack down on all you anti-Semites out there and all you white racists out there in France. It's funny how all that works. They get a crisis, and then our opposition turn it around and use it on our friends, you know? That's something else. You know, there was this black guy over there that was on the radio comedian, you know. A lot of you have heard him probably. That gives the Jews hell all the time. And they arrested him already. And he didn't do anything. So you can see the anti-free speech situation is going to come down hard. On the excuse of, it's hateful. You just can't do that hateful stuff, man. Once you know how the system runs, you know exactly what they're going to do at any particular time and day or hour. You know, you can see the first news release comes out. You know where it's going to go. It's going to go to a dark place. But, and then all the president of France was on there this morning. They got a big new battleship, you know, like it's costing billions of dollars to build this, or maybe it's an aircraft carrier, giant, you know, like France is rolling in dough. All this money has to come from the working class. The Joe Blow French guy, yeah, to build this damn big aircraft carrier. And he says, we're going to use this to put fear into the hearts of terrorists. Now, how's an aircraft carrier going to defend against lone wolf and unconventional warfare? It's not possible of any serious unconventional warfare people. What the hell do I worry about an aircraft carrier? If I was to go on a searching party or looking for problems, what would I do? Attack an aircraft carrier? No, I'd attack the people that built the aircraft carrier, the people that financed the aircraft carrier. The lone wolf Islamics, they don't need to go after the aircraft carrier. Yeah, all this stuff is just nonsense. It's crazy. It's insane, man. It's insane. Now, don't forget, there is no such thing as terrorism. That's just a word they latched onto, like Nazis and, you know, neo-Nazis. They latch onto these words that have just the right octaves involved, and they push it, push it, push it. There's only unconventional warfare. That's all there is. Oh, well, there's conventional warfare. Well, does this fit the just us situation here? Hi, TT. Today's news is an outrage. Some burr-headed Negro tried to rob a bank and the judge let him go. Well, let's see what happened here back there in Trenton, New Jersey. Okay, the attorney for this Negro told the jury that the nigger often mumbles and is difficult to understand. He also looked unkempt when he went to the bank and to make a deposit and had put his hand in his pocket for paperwork when the clerk believed Kidd was simulating a gun. Assistant prosecutor Tim Ward argued that the evidence supported the teller's account that the nigger indicated he had a weapon and demanded money. During closing arguments, Ward told juries a security guard who was former Hamilton Township police officer quickly approached Kidd after both he and the teller allegedly heard Kidd demand more money after the teller had already put some cash on the counter. Prosecutor said Kidd has 4 convictions on his record, including theft of a vehicle, conspiracy, and third-degree robbery in 1997. He was also convicted of burglary and receiving stolen property in 2005 and 2007, respectively. Damn, I wish I was a nigger. I should play that song. With admiration, Stray Dog from Browntown. P.S. Good to hear you read the book, Hitler, the Father of Israel. All right. Well, there you go. This Negro got off scot clean. Well, what's new? What's new? He must have known Obama. He must have voted for Obama. Well, here's a note from Poland. Hello, Tom. I hope you're doing fine. I feel a little beat cut off from you right now because you closed the 2014 radio archives. Well, I just checked with the webmaster, and the 2014 radio archives are open and clear, so you can go there. I'm from Poland, Europe, one of the last homogeneous countries in the region. Anyway, I'm very interested in our struggle and how we originated, found here, so I started to do some anthropology research on my own. I found a work from a guy named Lloyd Pye, P-Y-E. It would never interest me, but he is dead from right now for about a year, and in the web, everybody was saying it was murder. He had a very interesting lecture telling how we might have originated. I'm sending you the YouTube link. I promise you this is 2 hours long, but you will not be bored by watching this. More than 4 million viewers. Well, I'll check it out. Lloyd Pye. L-L-O-Y-D Pye. Everything you know is wrong. So, anyhow, I'll go up there and see what it is, and You can go up there to YouTube and see too, okay? You never know. It might be a jewel. Or it could just be a plain old rock. Well, it's about that time of the week to dig out another Sling Blade show out of our archives way down here in the deep ground in Indiana. So I'll go back here in the dark corners and search around. I'll be right back.
With Art Jones going up to demonstrate, we were on a van. We were in a van. The van was as a rental. It was being driven by a comrade from the Pacific Northwest. He was a member of the Portland, the INSF, the American National Socialist People's Workers Party, or something like that, whatever it was. And we were on our way to St. Xavier College to protest against the Elie Wiesel was there, the Jew Elie Wiesel, who wrote his book, Night, which is filled with a lot of contradictions. We're on the way up there, and I was trying to tell these young guys from Peoria, Illinois. These guys were like 18, 19 years old, trying to tell them, so listen, you guys got to become fanatics to learn as much as you can in the realm of martial arts, how to defend yourself with the knife, how to defend yourself against the knife, how to fight with the stick, how to fight against someone wielding a bludgeon, become proficient in handguns, because we may face a Mad Max type of society. You better know what to do with a handgun. There's a lot more to knowing about a handgun than pulling the trigger. How to clear a malfunction. You know, you have a 9mm Sig Sauer, and all of a sudden you're blasting away your enemy. All of a sudden you have a misfire. What do? You need to be able to clear that misfire. That malfunction, you need to clear it in a matter of seconds. No more than 2 seconds. It takes you no more than 2 seconds to determine whether that gun can go on functioning, or you need to use it as a bludgeon in your offhand while you go for your backup weapon. You know, depending on what type of malfunction it is. Is it a stove pipe, meaning failure to eject, failure to feed? You didn't know how to clear those up. You need to become proficient in all that shit in the functionings and the cyclic functionings of a firearm. If you're going to be on this in the struggle, can't say movement anymore. We really don't have a movement. Now the IRA, that was a movement. What we have in this country, and even probably, you know what, I'm going to leave Europeans and Australians out of it, because I'm not over there. I really can't judge what's going on. But I think I believe that I'm qualified to judge what's going on in the United States. We do not have a movement. We have a subculture, definitely. And there's a difference between the two. A movement, a revolutionary movement, is going somewhere. It's evolving. We're not evolving. You cannot honestly say we're a movement. If you want to say we're a movement, then we're a bowel movement, because we're really not going anywhere. The overwhelming majority of the white separatist thing going on in the United States is a subculture. That's all it is. I cannot tell you how many guys I've met in various groups who just don't like to read. They don't want to read. But they think they know it all, you know. Can't really tell them anything. I've experienced that. I've been around. I've rubbed elbows with members of the National Alliance, the World Church of Creator, NSM, and even a little bit of Klan, IKA. And I've had brief encounters with the Keystone State Skins, Vinlanders, not too many really to form an opinion. I believe that the Hammerskins are hardcore people. I can only assume that they are by the few that I've met. But we're really not going anywhere. So we're really not a movement. We're a subculture. We need to evolve into a fierce struggle. So, let me step down on my soapbox here and, bring about another boring edition of Radio Rehoboth while I read the last of my paranoid newsletters. This one deals with destructive entry or forced entry. It's a non-covert method of entry characterized by damage to the destruction of a locked safe or surrounding object, such as a door, window, or wall. It is by far the most common method of entry and is frequently used by law enforcement and military personnel for rapid entry to a residence or facility. As you might have guessed, there are many ways to destroy things. Techniques are classified by their method of destruction in terms of the physics and of the operation. Hey, method of destruction. Wasn't that like a spin-off band from Soldiers, Stormtroopers of Death? In the late 80s, early 90s, there was a band called Stormtroopers of Death. And they were kind of like a spin-off. You know, a couple of members of that project. They didn't tour or anything like that. They just made one studio album. And there was a couple of members of Anthrax. Well, there's an actual band that formed out of that, and they call themselves Method of Destruction. Maybe this guy was a fan. Remember the song Spandex of Normandy? Anyways. Method of destruction in terms of the physics of the operation, but often overlap and complement one another. All destructive techniques use energy or force to damage, displace, weaken, or destroy components. Once components to a lock, safe, window, or door, or wall lose structural or molecular integrity, their ability to resist compromise is considerably reduced. The general categories of destruction, destructive entry are chemicals, compression, impact, shearing, temperature, tension, and torsion. While the techniques discussed might seem advanced, the majority are rather simple when put in the perspective. Doors are kicked in, padlocked, shackles are cut, locks are drilled, etc., etc. Techniques are categorized to help the investigator identify, define, and study new attacks. While tools designed differ greatly, the tool marks and the forensic evidence they leave behind may help the investigators quickly identify the techniques used to gain entry. Now, I have not read this yet, but if you use a drill to make entry into somewhere, once that job's done, that drill bit needs to disappear forever. Because that drill bit leaves a forensic evidence, tool mark analysis, just like you can match a gun or bullet to a specific gun. You can actually match a drill to a specific drill mark left behind. That goes for anything. They can match the blade of a knife, even though after a knife is resharpened, it does change its ballistic trail. But just keep that in mind. All tools make marks that can be analyzed. I don't care what it is, pliers, wire crimpers, anything. Any tool makes a specific mark that no other tool can duplicate. Remember that. All right. Destructive entry principles. Chemicals are used to affect the molecular structure of components. Chemicals, namely acids, can corrode, disintegrate, or dissolve components. You know what? I'll tell you what right now. It's a good thing to know about chemicals. What chemical you can put on a chain link fence and come back a day later and just kick in the section that you put a mark on. You know, you can like take this chemical and use a paintbrush to administer it or something. You know, just put like a big circle there and come back a day later and just kick the hole in the fence. There are chemicals. You can find out what chemicals to use on something like that. Like temperature, chemicals often leave components vulnerable to other attacks. Compression is the use of pressure against a component in complementary directions. Essentially the opposite of tension. It causes distortion, compaction, and breakage of components. Compression is most often used to reduce the strength of materials so that other materials can be used. Impact is the use of pressure and shock against a component. Striking and explosives are most common. Impact has a wide variety of results, including fracturing, breakage, deformation, and compression. Some methods of bypass are used. Some methods of bypass use impact to retract the locking bolt, most of which are destructive. Explosives are one of the most dangerous methods of destructive entry, and use has dwindled after time as safer alternatives, such as drilling. Such as drilling become popular. Shearing. The use of pressure on a component placed between two edges. Cutting, chopping, drilling are included in this category. Drilling is the most popular method of destructive safe cracking and the removal of locks by a locksmith. In addition, drilling is probably the easiest, fastest method of destructive entry. Hey, you guys see the movie No Country for Old Men? Remember what Javier Bardem, the actor who played the hitman? Do you remember how he was using that thing that he was using to get in people's house or whatever? It's kind of some thing where some kind of pressurized tool. I guess it was used to kill cattle or something like that instantly. You put it up to a lock, and I guess you can just blow the lock apart inside the room or whatever. I thought that was interesting. I was wondering if someone could comment on that and say yay or nay about that. Extreme temperature can be used to affect the molecular structure components. High temperatures can vaporize, burn, melt, or retemper components. Retempering can leave components soft or brittle, thus vulnerable to many other attacks. Low temperatures are less common, but can be used for similar purposes. Tension is the use of pressure on a component in opposite directions. Stretching, pulling, prying, bending, or ripping are included in this category. Torsion is the use of rotational pressure, torque, on a component. Twisting and torque are included in this category. Causes shearing, compression, and the deformation of components. Destructive entry is fairly straightforward in terms of the method of entry, so focus is on the tool mark identification. The forensic locksmith must be wary of destructive techniques used as a method of hiding covert and surreptitious entry. A thorough investigation will reveal covert techniques and can potentially rule out destructive entry as the method of entry due to improbable direction, angle, or position of tool marks. My name is Michael Myers. Forensic evidence. The most common attack against padlocks is cutting the shackle, either in half or clean off. Almost all low to medium security non-shrouded padlocks are susceptible to this attack. You know what a shroud is. Sometimes, you know, you can get a lock that when you close it and lock like a storage unit, that there's no exposed U-clamp where that you can use bolt cutters on. The only way to bypass a lock like that is to shatter it or drill it. But you can't use compression on a lock like that. A closer examination of the tool mark reveals that a red substance is present in the area where the bolt cutter was used. This could be a variety of things: paint, dirt, grease, or rust. We must be able to match this material to the tool if a bolt cutter is found in the suspect's possessions. I say again, we may be able to match this material to the tool if a bolt cutter is found in a suspect's possessions. You know, bolt cutters can be expensive, and if you may need it again, I would keep it somewhere far from home and far from work. If you have a place to cache tools, I would definitely do that. It'd be a good idea to start cacheting tools for the simple fact that we could wind up in a Mad Max type of society. Alright, drilling, a form of lock shearing, is most common method of destructive entry against all types of locks. It is frequently used by locksmiths to remove locks when they cannot be opened non-destructively. In this photo, the plug of a kick cylinder, K-I-K, kick cylinder, has been drilled at the shear line, allowing the plug to freely rotate. Now, think about this. You have a lock. You come up the door, you have a lock that you insert your key in. That big brass-looking knob thing that you insert your key in, not the door knob. I'm talking about a lock, like a deadbolt or something. Inside that big brass thing is a little cylinder, which is where you insert your key. Now, that is what he's referring to when he calls it the plug. That's the plug. And if you can get that thing to rotate freely inside the whole locking mechanism, then the lock is compromised. On the forensic investigation page, we discussed the need to tape any openings and locks recovered at the scene of the freaking crime. In the photo, a large amount of metal is present inside the lock, the product of drilling. This material is preserved because it contains evidence useful to the investigation, such as shards of broken drill bits. But that won't apply to you, because you will get rid of that drill, right, Ghost Wolf? Ghost Wolves who are not part of a movement. Ghost Wolves who are not part of a subculture. I have racially tattoos. I guess they can be not any hardcore stuff like swastikas, but I have some European pre-Christian pagan symbols, but I don't mind giving that information out, because I have a death wish. My name is James Mowry. Okay, drills are much like firearms in terms of forensic evidence. Bullets fired from a gun have striae based on the barrel used. The same goes for drill bits used in destructive entry. In the photo, the spiral striae left by the drill bit can clearly be seen in the plug of the lock. Remember what the plug is. They can look inside that and get a microscopic picture as an actual fingerprint of a drill. Impact is a versatile method of destructive entry that is extremely effective against windows, doors, and walls. In the photo, a padlock has been hammered until the shackle broke. I guess I should call that U part, the shackle. The direction of the break can tell us what angle it was being struck from. Additional tool marks will likely be found on the body of the padlock, like indentations from a hammer. In this photo, the body of a padlock shows tool marks in places where the hammer impacted the lock. The crescent-shaped marks are numerous and can be measured to determine the size and shape of the hammer used. At least three different points of impact are visible. Okay, so they can trace a hammer you find, a hammer that they find in your possession, to hammer marks on a lock if you need to break open a lock using a hammer. but it's a nice hammer. You don't want to part with it? You don't want to throw it in the lake, maybe? Or maybe melt it down in a foundry? Well, you better hide it far from home and far from work and make sure it doesn't have your fingerprints on it. And make sure that you didn't purchase it with Ace Hardware, you know, points card. You know, you use this card when you purchase things and you acquire points. You don't want nothing to do with stuff like that. You paid cash for it. In this photo, the body of the padlock shows tool marks in places where the hammer impacted the lock. The crescent-shaped marks are numerous, can be measured to determine the size. Okay, I already read that. All right. Heavy damage to the face or keyway of a lock can mean many things. A thorough investigation of tool marks, including angles and positions, helped to reveal how entry was accomplished. In this photo, the keyway has been considerably widened and gouged so a tool can be inserted, probably a screwdriver or a chisel. In addition to damage to the keyway, the upper pin chambers have been completely sheared off, leaving the plug and broken cylinder free to rotate in the lock. This attack appears to be torsion applied counterclockwise to the plug through the use of a screwdriver. Pins inside the lock show heavy damage from where the screwdriver or chisel was forced into the keyway. Examination of what is left of the tip of a pin shows no indication of covert entry techniques. Because of the force used, tool marks on the pins are rather distinct and may later be used to link suspects to a crime. Now, if you keep that tool, or not if you dispose of that tool, I mean. Okay. My name is Tommy Gumballone. All right. European profile cylinders are used in place by a screw that extends through the center of the cylinder. Because the cam is beneath this point, it is the thinnest part of the lock and thus the easiest to break. In this photo, European profile cylinder has been snapped in half, forced to the left using a common hand tool. Okay. It's hard for me to describe the picture. So what do you want to do? You want to write Tom Metzger, send him $15, and request the 9th issue of the Paranoid Newsletter. That's what you want to do. The base of this attack is that there is enough of the cylinder extending through the door, as little as a few millimeters, and a tool used to grab and apply force to the lock. In this photo, tool marks can be seen where the tool was used to grab the front of the lock. The cam of the bolt can also be examined to determine which way the lock was snapped. This is generally not important, but the lock may have been snapped at an angle that is impossible when the door is closed, indicating fraud or misdirection from the real method of entry. Many destructive attacks against low security padlocks break the shackle because relative to the body, it is the weakest component. In this photo, the padlock shackle is broken in two places, with one piece being struck beneath the locking bolt. A thorough examination of both the shackle and the padlock body helps to identify the specific technique used. In this photo, the body of the padlock shows excessive distortion in the form of twisting, indicative of extreme torsion being applied to the padlock. So when they find a padlock that's broken, where the shackle is broken in two places because of a torsion technique, twisting it. Tool marks from the torsion tool are found on the edges of the padlock. Marks appear to be rather fresh, thus the most likely candidates for the attack in question. Every metal tool leaves a mark that can be traced back to that specific tool. A closer inspection of the tool marks shows a series of parallel teeth marks, probably from the use of a plumber's wrench or torque and groove pliers. The marks can be used in tool mark comparisons done with tools found in the suspect's possessions. Simulating lock picking is common in insurance fraud or when the insurance holder is worried about coverage. These people rarely understand lock picking and just jam a screwdriver in the lock to make marks. In most cases, material removal and tool marks are present at the front of the cylinder, but not past the first or second pin. The pins in simulated lock picking will have a large amount of material removal and tool marks that are not consistent with any type of covert entry, including lock picking or key bumping. Marks will usually not be found on the pins in the back of the lock. Chemicals are powerful because they can fundamentally alter metals and leave them vulnerable to many other attacks. In this case, brass pins are dark red and brown because of NO2. What is that, nitrous oxide 2? Is that what that is? I'm not familiar with the periodic table. I see an N, capital NO, and that towards the bottom of the O is a 2. So that must be nitrous oxide 2. Fumes released when concentrated nitric acid contacted the brass components. Nitric acid has the effect of eating away the copper and brass. See? You gotta know chemicals, guys, especially for you really smart lone wolves. And by the way, if you use a chemical, make sure the remainder of that container or whatever is not found anywhere in your shed, your house, your basement, your workplace. And in fact, I would learn as much as you can about chemicals and not let anyone know that you know this stuff. Closer examination can confirm the use of nitric acid by identifying trace evidence left by the chemical reaction between nitric acid and brass. The scattered blue particles are cupric nitrate and zinc nitrate, a byproduct of the chemical reaction. Forensic examination of lockpick tool marks. In almost all cases of lockpicking, two tools are used. A tension tool, or a tension bar it's called sometimes, is used to gently apply tension to the lock. That's done, I believe, at the bottom of the keyhole. And a pick is used to position components. As tension is applied to the plug, bolt, and other component, locking components will bind in some way. The pick can be used to determine which component is binding and then used to position it properly. The correct position of a component is known by the attacker through feedback in the form of touch, sight, and sound. Let me read that again. The correct position of a component is known by the attacker through feedback in the form of touch, sight, and sound. The tension bar holds properly positioned components in place, and the attacker repeats the process. Once all components are properly positioned, the lock can be unlocked or locked. The nature of lock picking necessitates that strong materials be used for tension and picking tools. Tools are commonly made out of steel, iron, and aluminum. Tools are thin on an average of 0.025. That would be a quarter of an inch. No, not a quarter of an inch. It would be less than a quarter of an inch with pin tumbler ticks. I know you smart guys out there, when you listen to me talk this about stuff like this, you got to be laughing your ass off. Man, this guy don't know shit. I don't claim to know anything. I want to put information out there. The things that I do know about, a lot about, is stuff like war to flee and stuff that I've had actual hands-on experience when I was in the military. But when it comes to stuff like this, I just want the right person out there who's a ghost wolf to hear it. That's all. All right. What are you saying, Frank Bauer? Do you condone, or what are you saying, Tommy Gun Malone? Do you condone this? Do you condone criminal activity, Eric Blackburn? Absolutely. I do. Simply because the people who write our laws are more corrupt than anyone else who breaks them. And they have shown over and over again that the people who break laws, I mean, look at black gangbangers and drug dealers have more respect in our society than skinheads and white racialists. And you got people who go out of their way to adopt a highway and do all this stuff. Yeah, you're going to make the news. Like that Denver unit of the NSM made the news in Chicago. And they purposely let you make the news to show you, hey, we're getting publicity. You know, because they don't want you to go guerrilla. That's what it is. They're going to give you your publicity when if you, I remember there was a big National Alliance leaflet distribution a number of years ago against St. Sabina school in the city. St. Sabina is a black Catholic school. And that Father Flager, Faggot Flager, was pushing for St. Sabina school to be put in some kind of conference with a bunch of other white schools, which would bring their black students and their black student body into contact with white schools out in the burbs or whatever. And a lot of whites didn't want that. You know, keep that black city, that black school in the ghetto. We don't want it out here for school football games and stuff like that. It only means trouble. So they had that, it was all over the news about the, I mean, there were hundreds of pieces of literature distributed. And they got their news. They got their 15 minutes of fame for that. And that was a number of years ago, and it didn't do nothing to save our race. Absolutely nothing. Our race is going, gone. The only thing that accomplished is it got the National Lions Chicago Proto Unit their 15 minutes of fame in the news. That's all. I'll wake up and smell the coffee. Talk about requiring a medium or more amount of force to move locking components when contacting the softer base or nickel silver of the locking components. Pick and tension tools leave marks in the form of gouges and scratches. The best source of forensic evidence of lock picking are on the components themselves. But the lock housing, bolt, and cam can also be examined depending on the type of lock. Forensic evidence. The act of using a pick tool is invasive, and we expect the stronger material of the pick tool to cause marks on the softer brass and nickel silver of the lock components. In this photo, we see scratches where the pick tool was used to lift the pin. This appears to be a single pin picking marks due to their shape and consistency. This photo is similar to the last, but instead they are many varied elongated scratches at different angles and depths of the pin. This type of marking is indicative of a pick that is designed to be gently rubbed against the pin to varying heights and tension. Okay, for the rest of this, I think they're pretty much talking about what kind of tools are left behind. The marks left by an attacker in many ways indicate their skill level. In this photo, extremely deep and plentiful pick marks are shown. The attacker, an amateur, used extreme force on both tension and pick tools. Extreme tension causes pins to bind against plug and require more force to be lifted. This picture they show here. This is a very skilled attacker and used extremely light tension and picking to force and reduce forensic evidence. Despite skill, we still find similar forensic evidence in this photo, pick marks are extremely light but visible in the center of the pin. We can also see some marks on the side of the pin, which is more defined. There are many other designs of pin tumbler besides the standard round on pointed tips. There's a photo of the Multi-Lock telescoping pin tumbler that uses an inner and outer pin stack. When it comes to pins and tumblers inside locks, that's pretty esoteric stuff, and I'm gonna let the smarter guys comment on that. I just want to put information out there to get you guys interested in the paranoid newsletter. For the attacker, it's difficult not to touch the sides of pins. This can happen during racking as well as a single pin picking. Marks left on the side of pins are quite noticeable and not as prone to wear than those in the center of the pin. In the photo, light scratches at varied angles are visible. Alright, in the case of low-high pinning combinations, it's harder to lift the pins without touching the sides of both pins. Next paragraph starts off with, like the bottoms of the pins, the sides can tell greatly about the skill level of the attacker. Okay, the movement of the pick through the keyway also leaves forensic evidence in several places. The most common is on the walls of the plug itself. One of the best places to look in the plug is at the top of the keyway. The key will never touch this area, so it is one of the few virgin areas in the lock. Okay, marks on the warding inside of the plug is also common. Normal use of keys does not usually cause these marks. But if they are indeed the cause, marks should be present on several other wards as well. Marks may also be left in the pin chambers themselves. In this photo, we see a mark on the left side of the pin chamber. We might find pick marks higher in the pin chambers, too. These areas are subject to wear as pin stacks are moved by the normal action of the key. Right. Eric Blackburn. Forensic evidence of the tension tool can also be identified rather easily, especially if the attacker is a beginner or an amateur lock picker. Alright, destructive assembly of the plug lets us get a better picture of the tension tool marks. Okay. In the case of a skilled attacker, very light torque is applied to the tension tool. It may become more complicated to identify marks without proper lighting. The cam may also have marks because many attackers, when navigating the back of the plug, will hit the cam. This is usually true of less controlled techniques, like raking in the photo. One of the problems as an amateur is knowing where the pick is. It's common to see many amateurs with the tip of the pick pointing out of the cylinder. The effects of wear. The question always arises as to how we can determine when pick marks were made or how long it takes normal wear to remove them. Interesting. Right. After 250 uses, roughly 2 to 4 months used, the tip of the pin has been worn by the key, leaving fewer distinct picking marks. At the same time, the sides of the pin still show very clear, distinct picking marks. This is because the key does not touch these areas as frequently and may never, depending on the key biting. The key bitting, B-I-T-T-I-N-G. While taking this last photo, I noticed a strange shape at the top right of the photo. When I refocused to that area, I found this. It appeared to be a small piece of brass that has transferred to the tip of the pin, probably a small fragment of the key. Quick, call the crime lab. Okay. All right, non-metal lockpicks. Carbon fiber lockpicks were considered for use in anti-forensics. But my research shows that they leave marks similar to traditional lockpicking tools. Carbon fiber picks do not work as well as I hoped. Most importantly, they fell short of surreptitious by leaving marks on pin tumblers similar to traditional tools. Carbon fiber lockpicks also seem to grab and hold pin materials much better than their metal counterparts. Also considered for anti-forensics were fiberglass-based lockpicking tools. My research shows that these are also unsuitable because they leave distinct forensic evidence on the pins and inside the plug. Right. Who out there will do the good deed of buying Jimmy Wire's book at Paladin Press, How to Pick Any Lock? That's why you need a fake ID in a post office box or a mail drop, like using an abandoned house that doesn't look abandoned as the place to get mail delivered to. Fiberglass, and you know what? You got to be in a situation where you can follow the, I mean, I think that would work. You send a letter to Paladin Press using a fake ID, not a fake ID, but an alias. You have your package sent to the house. You get to know your mailman in that area when he's making his rounds. My mailman, I see him around my house right around 11:30, 12 o'clock. I know when he's in the area. So I watched this guy without being watched by other people, me watching him. You know what I'm saying? You need to watch him with casual confidence and don't look out of place. Don't look criminal. And if he walks by that abandoned house and doesn't leave anything, well, you can go about your day. Otherwise, you can watch him too. Sometimes a UPS truck will show up. You know, maybe you can leave a note with Paladin Press saying, hey, just tell mailman to leave package in the door, in screen door, you know. Leave it between the screen door and the actual door, the hardwood door. That's why I wouldn't order big orders where it makes the screen door look open when they put it between there. You want it like one book, one tape at a time like that. So the screen door will close. And I wouldn't use a house that has a for sale sign in front of it. You don't want some realtor finding it either. Okay. Fiberglass also left various traces similar to the traditional lock picking tools. Right. Alright, where did I leave off at? Something about, let me read again. Fiberglass also left various traces similar to traditional metal lock picking tools. In this photo, parallel scratches at various angles in photo or positions can be seen on the bottom and side of the pin tumbler. All marks are caused by the fiberglass picking tools. Fiberglass is also less surreptitious than carbon fiber because the act of picking and raking a lock leaves behind a sizable amount of fiberglass on the pin tumblers and walls of the plug. In this photo, fiberglass residue can be seen on the tip of the pin tumbler. Like carbon fiber picks, fiberglass does a very good job of trapping trace evidence from the pin tumbler inside the lock onto the pick. In this photo, the tip of the fiberglass pick is shown with light brass residue and lubricant, black, clearly visible. Thank you for reading the ninth. Well, thank you for reading our ninth edition. Visit resist.com to buy future and archived editions. Sure, you can trust the government. Just ask an Indian. Fuck the Indians. We work with a separate organization that allows us to maintain our privacy and acts as a cashier for sales and donations. Please refer to the paranormal. I don't mean to harp. I don't mean to beat a dead horse. But this NSM thing about adopting the highway really has got me pissed off. We already are not respected by black and brown and other things like that. Incidentally, a newscaster who talked about it last night on Fox News said that how they adopted this highway, and you can see the signs is this mile is policed or taken care of by the National Socialist Movement Denver unit. And they ended the story with, we talked to a spokesman who said that we just want people to know that we're good people too. I don't want them to know that. I don't want the mass to think that we're good people. Remember, it's better to be feared than to be loved. And you will not be loved in this country, NSM. I haven't talked to Phil Anderson, the guy from the Illinois National Socialist Front, about what happened to him when he was jumped, I guess, by some ARA. I'm going to tell you right now, that is going to continue to happen, and it's going to get worse if we don't start doing something about it. And adopting a highway for a mile is not going to do it. It's not going to do anything for our cause. We need war to flee. Forward-looking, enterprising Aryans. We're willing to step out of the box and willing to start doing things differently. I've said it before, and I'm sure I'll say it 1,000 more times if fate allows me to that time to say it. And that is, we have to define our own time and place in the white separatist struggle. Germany had their time. They had their swastika. They had their red flag with the swastika. Red flag because they wanted to attract socialists and even communists to their banner. That's why their flag was red. You could make the argument that National Socialists were on the left and not on the right, but for some reason neo-Nazis are considered right-wing. I sure hope that there are a number of Radio Club listeners out there. If you belong to organizations, I hope you're starting to see the light now. It is an exercise in futility. I can't harp enough about leaderless resistance. And I'm not the guy who started it. I guess Louis Beam. I believe Louis Beam or Bob Miles. I think it was Louis Beam who started the concept of leaderless resistance. Read the Paranoid newsletter about white-collar criminals. But law enforcement has a really hard time with white-collar criminals who are predominantly white. Reason being is because they drive street legal cars that are nondescript, but everything functions on them. All the lights are fine on them. They tend to wear blazers, maybe with a shirt and tie. When they talk to an officer, they say yes sir, no sir. They don't say, "Hell with you, pissant. Get out of my way," or whatever. You know. They fly below the radar. They don't speed. They don't make traffic violations. They don't bring no attention to them. You already have an advantage in the fact that you're white. But if you go around wearing a t-shirt that has Obama's face pictured with a chimpanzee, you're not helping our cause at all. In fact, you're just really telling everybody what you're about. And you may find yourself in a situation where you're in a certain area where you can get beat up by ARA for shit like that. It is not cowardice for us to go out there and swim in the sea of people and fly under the radar. That is not cowardice. That is good military tactics. We are in a state of war, whether you want to recognize it or not. And we have to get to a point where people who want to go along with the same old program, we need to see them as the enemy. The Tea Party thing is not our friends. It is not something that we want to support. It is only a dead-end issue that's going to frustrate and distract potential revolutionary leaders. When NSM adopts a highway just so they can look good in the eyes of the public, to me, it's just like the Tea Party thing. How many potential smart white gorillas we can have in the Denver unit of the NSM that can go out there, maybe even relocate, maybe even change their appearance a little bit and become true activists in the ghost wolf sense of the word. But when they go out and they adopt the highway, I think it's worse than the Tea Party thing. A lot of ignorant people in the Tea Party thing, they believe in the God and the Constitution and the flag and all that stuff. I don't simply because those things can be used against us. There's a lot of Jews in the right-wing movement in America. Bernie Goldberg, Gutfeld, I forgot his first name. Some guy named Horowitz. I mean, there's Jews in the right-wing sphere of American politics. Not all Jews are in the left wing. Jews are in the right wing simply because to monitor it, to make sure it doesn't take an anti-Semitic tone, to steer it away from a racist tone. Their presence in the right wing is simply to steer it along towards an end that will not change things in the United States. And if you go along with their program by doing Mickey Mouse shit like adopting a highway, you know, I know a couple people in the NSM, and I like them. I like them simply because, you know, I can talk to them about the Jews and the blacks and stuff like that. So I consider them racial kinsmen. But I'm really pissed off about this, that they would go to such measures to try to clean up their image. And it's starting to make me wonder, who's in charge I mean, I don't think Jeff Scoop is a Jew. I know he's not a Jew. I know he's not, at least I don't think he's a government plant. I don't think he's a rat. I don't think he's an agent provocateur. He's definitely not that. But I hope he uses his influence to frown upon stuff like that. We are not going to get anywhere in this country by kissing people's ass. And adopting a highway is kissing people's ass. It's basically saying, hey, look at me. You know, I care about the environment. I want you to like me. That's not the way Frank Bauer goes about doing things. I don't care who likes me or who doesn't like me. I recognize that power comes from the barrel of a gun. And the right-wing people in this country, like Glenn Beck, they hate that statement. We don't believe that. We don't agree with Mao. Listen, I don't like Mao, but I agree with him. Power does come from the barrel of a gun. Now, there's been progressives in this country who've said the same thing. Some Jew named Bloom, I guess who's the manufacturing czar or something like that. He said, we generally agree with Mao when he said power comes from a barrel of a gun. I don't want nothing to do with that guy. I'm not with him. I don't side with him. I'm not on the left or on the right. I am of the third position. That is, I believe in the survival of the white race by any means necessary. That means doing some dastardly deeds to manifest that. Then we need to be about that. If you're not willing to do that, then you don't want to seek an existence for white people and a future for white children. You don't want to secure an existence for white people and a future for white children if you go along with Mickey Mouse shit like that. You know, I saw a movie the other night called The International with Clive Owen, he's a journalist, trying to investigate this bad bank who's involved in a lot of shady stuff. And when he captured one of the head honchos, he's interrogating him, and basically the guy, I guess, wants to turn a new leaf and start working against the bank. He said, you cannot take this bank down within the bounds of the law. And I agree, you cannot fight for our race effectively within the bounds of the law. Rahola, 14 words. Starve the sheep inside and feed the wolf.
Thanks, Slingblade. That was good. Got a little dry in that lockpicking thing, but just still important information. If you want... copy of those paranoid newsletters, I still have some, so just contact me about it and you can read it yourself. That's it. 14:05. I'll be back tomorrow, Thursday, and don't let all these crises get you excited. Actually, they're pretty funny. These crises are manufactured totally for mass control of the people, the population, the peasants. Don't fall for it. It's a joke. It's a joke. And it's so easy to see through, it's unbelievable. 5 words.